You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Got out of town on a boat from the Southern Islands, sailing to reach for a following sea. She was making for the trades on the outside, and the downhill run to Papa'e Bay. Off the wind on this heading lies a Marquesa. We got 80 feet of a water line, nicely making way in the noisy bar in Avalon.
808 here on a Thursday. You know, I have a great job, just for the record. Go from talking to Grant Newsham about North Korea to having on retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Rusty Blackman talking about the Marine Corps Foundation and all the great work it does. And we're just talking about helo dunker training, as a matter of fact. So, sir, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you. Thanks for letting me talk a little bit about the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation and our final phase of construction, which is now complete, and what comes with that, the Medal of Honor Theater and our film, We the Marines.
Can we talk a few minutes? I have a leadership question for you, and then I'd also like to get your an opinion about North Korea. As well, you have a lot of pretty incredible experience one goes through your resume. What do you make about what are your thoughts on North Korea? Grant Newsham is an intel guy, Pacific Rim guy, retired Marine, and he says, "Look, China is not going to help us. They haven't helped us for 25 years, and they're not going to help us now." And you know, the fact that we somehow cling to that is a ridiculous notion. There's nothing that should give us any solace in placing any wager that China is going to intercede. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that, sir. What do you think about North Korea?
I mean, my personal opinion only, certainly not right. Reflective of anybody else here at the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation, but I tend to agree with that. You know, countries act in their own best interests, first and foremost. The United States should, North Korea should, China should. And you know, I don't think it happens, you know, as often as we would like that the best interests of China and the United States coincide, even over you know, something like Korea. I mean, I think the last thing that China wants is a unified Korean peninsula, and putting a strong ally of the United States essentially in, you know, an expanded Republic of Korea on their border. And in my mind, I think they're going to do everything they can to prop up, you know, to ensure that there is that buffer there. But it may not, whatever they do may be way out of line with what we would think is in our best interest.
No, and that makes perfect sense, right? Why would China want to see a unified, which it would be, you know, if we fight for it and we win it, we own it, and we would certainly unify the peninsula. Why would that would certainly not be in their interest to see a stronger Korean peninsula. But it seems like for whatever reason we hold out some kind of hope that's going to happen.
Yeah, but I think that's human nature, you know, is you know, always kind of hoping for the best, you know, kind of holding out for, you know, some miraculous turn of events. You know, I think, you know, all too often, I think, you know, as individuals, you know, we sort of include hope as a course of action. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, but it doesn't, it is not a good situation, that is for sure.
All right. I want to, first of all, Rusty, when did you come in the Marine Corps?
1970.
Did you, I didn't see that you had any time in Vietnam. Is that my error?
No, no. I mean, I sat in, I floated off the coast of Vietnam as a lieutenant in the SLF, but to say that I had experience in Vietnam would be not the case.
Okay, I want to ask you an opinion, because obviously you're a Vietnam-era Marine. I had the occasion, I was talking to one of the company commanders at Quezon, and he asked me if I knew anything about My Lai. And I said, well, yeah, I know general stuff. And then after I got off the phone, I thought, how stupid is that? I mean, how do I not know about My Lai? So I started researching. And I was, one of the things that really got me interested was I made an assumption that My Lai was the company that was involved, Charlie Company, what I think first of the 20th Infantry Regiment, had been in Vietnam for a long time, and they had taken their lumps, and they had been in Vietnam for 7 weeks. And when I read that, I was like, well, I don't understand what happened then. How, I don't understand how you get that from such a short experience in the country. And so the more I read, and I watched videos and saw just the powerful impact, it spoke to the whole keep your honor clean kind of theme that the Commandant has, General Neller. And in that, I don't think we teach that very well, because it's almost like I think the way it gets sold often is you're going to keep your honor clean so that we keep the Marine Corps clean. And, I mean, hell, the line's even in the song, right? And to keep your honor clean. Did they know about the mental, the impact of behaving poorly in combat, that you have to live with that for the rest of your life? Because what I saw and my takeaway was these guys' lives were destroyed by what they did in My Lai. And then, combatants have had to live with this stuff forever. And the whole keep your honor clean, first and foremost, is for you, not for the institution. If you don't behave well, if you deviate from the law of land warfare, from the pillars that keep us as combatants and not murderers, that you do so at the peril of your own, certainly, health and well-being. Because these guys, the interview, it showed them interviewed 2 years when My Lai broke in 1970. It happened in 68. The story breaks in 70. And then they're interviewed 20 years later. And it's astounding to listen to the things they say. So I wanted to ask you about leadership in Vietnam, and because you grew up in the specter of it. You know so many guys that have fought there. Do you think leadership in Vietnam was so different? You know, we hear the stories about the drugs. We hear the stories about scalps and ears and mutilation. We hear stories about rape. And then also the killing of civilians. Was Vietnam that different?
Different from what?
From any...
Let me just give you my thought on that.
Sure.
I mean, I can't speak to, I think we had extraordinary leadership, and I think it, if you really think about it, it was especially extraordinary because of the individual rotation.
Right.
In other words, you know, you had Marines, you know, lieutenants or PFCs joining the unit, continually. and Marines, you know, rotating back home continually. And especially in an environment where, you know, you have a lot of really detached company size operations, it's very hard for the, you know, battalion level leadership where, in my opinion, the real rubber meets the road. The buck stops, in my opinion, at the battalion and squadron level. But you had such a detached kind of, environment that it was difficult for, in my mind, the leadership, the battalion commander, sergeant major, you know, oftentimes the, you know, company commander and first sergeant to, you know, have that continuous leadership influence on Marines. And so somebody shows up, you know, and heard a lot of stories, shows up in Vietnam, and, you know, things can go south. I think one of the, you know, saving graces of our continuous deployments for many years to Iraq and Afghanistan was battalions, you know, training together, leaders getting to know their men. I mean, really understanding what each of the lance corporals was all about, what each of the sergeants was all about, and deploying as a unit and being able to, in a more direct way, have the senior leadership of that battalion commander, XO, OPSO, company commanders really, you know, kind of continually reinforce that foundation of, you know, doing the right thing, keeping not only, like you said, the unit's honor clean, but each and every individual's honor clean, and recognizing that a 19-20-year-old might have to live with something for the next, you know, 60, 70 years.
It's absolutely amazing. And some of the interesting things, I had Carl Marlanis on, who I know you know. You probably know, do you remember Ken Rogers? He and his wife Betty made the documentary Case On.
Yes. Absolutely.
And so after I kind of went through Me Lai, you know, I played some of it on the air, and then I had guys who were in Vietnam, fought there, led there. I Jarvis Lynch on, and was it different? And their answers were incredibly riveting, and then I played a couple of clips from General Zinni. General Zinni talks about after being an advisor, going back as a company commander, he said he gets there, and at one point he sees a Marine with scalps in his cover, and ears or something. And he said, I grabbed the cover, I threw it in the fire, and I said, this shit will never happen as long as I'm the commander here. And he did the same thing with a Marine who had pictures of mutilated bodies. And, you know, and then he said, and do you know what their reaction was? And half of me thought, well, they were pissed. And he said they were relieved.
Exactly.
They were relieved that this was not going to be tolerated. And then Carl Marlanis, and he writes in his book, What It's Like to Go to War. He said in his book that he found after one fight, and Marlanis was up in the central highlands of the northern part of South Vietnam, up by the DMZ, fighting the NVA primarily. He said, I saw two of my Marines had ears, and I walked over to him. Now, he's a first lieutenant, right? He's a first lieutenant. He says, where did you get those? And they pointed to a stack of bodies. He said, we went over, and I made them find the bodies. And I made them bury them. And as they're digging, I walked back over, you know, I don't know, he said 10, 15 minutes later to check on them. And they both had tears coming down their face. And because we had, you know, they'd become human beings again. And he said, and I never had a problem with it after that. And Ken Rogers tells a story at the tail end of Quezon that as the NVA were more and more scarce, they started patrolling looking for them. He said, we at one point moved past a pile of decomposed bodies, and one of the guys in the patrol grabbed a femur out of the pile and stuck it in his war belt. And he said within a few minutes, one of the squad leaders walked up to him and said, get rid of that shit right now. And he did. And he said, and that's the only time I recall, you know, us dealing with it. And so, you know, it seems to me that you hear those stories. And the other thing that was interesting is they were all anxious to talk about My Lai. They wanted to because of how it painted them as Vietnam veterans, and give their thoughts about what good leadership was, and how General Lynch talked about. He said, I didn't believe it when I heard it. I thought there's no way Americans could do that. No way. And he said, so it was astounding when it happened. But he said, the points about leadership are leadership is leadership. And if you do that, it works. So anyway, just I appreciate your thoughts on the issue. Let's talk about any final words, before any final comments about that before I move on?
No, I think, like you said, I think we as a people, all Americans, are fundamentally good people. And I think people want to be, you know, I think people kind of generally like to be told what to do. I mean, I think we all do in a way. It makes life so much easier. And I think, you know, leaders at every level. And sometimes, you know, I think we have the quality of young men and women now serving. Sometimes leadership can come from the bottom up, too. I think, you know, the squad leader is kind of walking down a bad path. I think we have the kind of quality people today, the Lance Corporals, who can say, Sergeant, you know, this, you know, we're going down a bad path here. And so I agree with you. And I think something like My Lai, as, you know, extraordinary tragedy, but it was a strategic strategy. My Lai triggered, you know, what was already a pretty intense anti-war movement. But, boy, you talk about pouring a 55-gallon drum of gasoline on it. It was My Lai.
It's very interesting. And, you know, and you can reteach those lessons with 3-5 in Hamidiya, right, sir, with the urination on bodies in Afghanistan. When you see guys begin to go, if there isn't somebody standing there, right, nobody goes to jail, nobody's dead, nobody gets a bad conduct discharge. If somebody intervenes, the incidents of Paris Island the same way. So I think that, you know, it's extremely interesting, this vein of leadership that runs through all of our times in the Marine Corps, and just the examination of what is it to keep your honor clean, and how does it impact us not only as an institution, but what we as leaders, what those and individuals have to live with once we get beyond those events. So I find it very interesting. Now let's talk about. First of all, I appreciate your comments. One of the reasons I love having you on is the liberal arts discussion of leadership in current events, as well as the foundation. Before we talk about your new theater and whatnot, give us the latest news. What's new and exciting with the foundation?
Well, the foundation, you know, after half a dozen years of planning and raising the money and overseeing 2 years of construction, the final phase of our museum, at least probably in our lifetime, not certainly in the decades to come, but final phase of construction was completed. That brings, if you will, the space, the gallery space, to extend the history of the Marine Corps from where it ends now at the end of the Vietnam War up through the present day. And there will be two new galleries. The first gallery will be entitled Forward Deployed, and it will honor Marines through the period of the late 70s, 80s, and 90s who served in Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Somalia, Beirut, Grenada, Panama, but in countless other deployments around the world, really following the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it will also chronicle our service in humanitarian and disaster relief operations. It will honor our Marine security guards around the world, et cetera. And then, of course, the final gallery, the War on Terror, will specifically address the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. And, you know, when I came here to the foundation about 6.5 years ago, I was particularly focused on honoring the service of the Marines who have now served in Iraq and Afghanistan for 16 years. And I mean, it is just an absolutely extraordinary chapter in our history, a long and painful chapter. And when the museum first opened in 2006, the Vietnam veterans brought their grandchildren to the museum, and I did not want that to be the case for the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. I wanted them to bring their children so that they could see what mom or dad's service on multiple deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan really meant and what it was all about. So to me, of most significance are those two new historical galleries, and they will open, we're looking at the end of 2018. In addition to that, we will have a Hall of Valor right off of the Central Leatherneck Gallery that will certainly, in a very reverential way, honor our Medal of Honor recipients from the first in the Civil War through Kyle Carpenter in the War on Terror. But in addition to that, it will also recognize all Marines who have earned any award for valor through Navy Cross, Silver Star, Bronze Star. And while we won't be able to honor every single Marine, the museum staff will rotate, Silver Stars from, say, World War One, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and rotate those citations, pictures, and the medal continuously there in the Hall of Valor. And lastly, we will also honor all of our Purple Heart recipients there in the Hall of Valor. It's really important to accomplishing our mission at the Heritage Foundation of preserving and promulgating the history, traditions, and culture of the Marine Corps and educating all Marines in its virtues. We're also opening at the end of this year the Children's Gallery, which is an integral part of the new education suite. We annually, here over the last couple of years, have gotten about 54,000 school children who come through on organized school trips and structured activities. And so We will add two classrooms and a student activity room, as well as a children's gallery where younger children can, you know, get in a truck, get in the cockpit of a helicopter, you know, touch things and feel more a part of the history of our Corps. And I think, you know, as I tie the kids to, you know, our mission here, the sophomores in high school this year who will start in the next were not born on 9/11.
Wow.
And the seniors in high school this year were probably 2 years old and have no memories, no conscious memories of anything surrounding that fateful day and what it led to for our country and certainly for the Marine Corps over the next 16 years. So I think that what we bring in terms of to that gallery, where we tee up the gallery and provide context for it, you know, we will have a beam from the World Trade Center and a piece of the facade from the Pentagon. And I think it's important, believe it or not, for high school kids to have a better understanding of certainly the global war on terrorism, but what really was the events of 9/11 that took us to war. So that certainly is an important new feature. We also have a combat art gallery that is open to the public today. The first show is combat art from the end of the Vietnam War, from Beirut, Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Iraq, Afghanistan, etc. There's 100 pieces in the show, and that will be open for about the next 10 months or so, and then we will change out to a new show that I believe will focus on World War I, since next year will be the 100th anniversary of the end of that war.
Wow.
So, you know, that will be a continually changing gallery with just some spectacular pieces of art. The Marine Corps actually owns about 9,000 pieces of original art that very, very hard to display it to the American people. But for the first time with that art gallery, extraordinary art will be available to all Americans. And certainly last but not least is our Medal of Honor Theater, which was sponsored by Lockheed Martin. 369-seat giant screen theater. And when I say giant screen, the screen is 54 feet by 70 feet.
Wow.
And what we'll show exclusively here for, say, the next 6 months is our signature film, We the Marines. It was filmed by McGilvery Freeman, who have done, you know, similar giant screen format films. To Fly, for example, that has been shown in the Air and Space Museum for about 40 years, is a McGilvery Freeman. The Magic of Flight that shows at the Naval Aviation Museum. But, you know, they've been to the top of Mount Everest and, you know, had the privilege of swimming with the Great Whites and Great Barrier Reef in Australia. So they do those kind of films, and the film is absolutely extraordinary. It is open to the public now and has been for a month or so. And what it does in 40 minutes is it chronicles the journey of a Marine from boot camp and OCS through training, deployment, and finally, homecoming. It's got an extraordinary sound system with 50 speakers and 15 channels of sound. and it really, in, you know, the film and the sound engulf you, and it puts you really in the boots of a young man and woman, a young man or woman getting off the bus at Parris Island or San Diego, being handed an Eagle Globe at anchor after the Crucible, onto training, deployment, and finally homecoming. So it's a, it really has, you know, met everybody's expectations. We had a group, in last night that saw the film, General Walt Boomer, and the COBANs, the advisors from Vietnam saw it, and you know, were you know, more than happy with what they saw, and I think it kind of took them back to, you know, being young men and going to war. So I think any of our visitors who are here at the museum would be well served to kind of finish their day, if you will, by seeing We the Marines.
My guest this morning is retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General Rusty Blackman. He's the president and CEO of the Marine Corps Foundation, and we're talking about some great things that are happening relative to the foundation and the National Museum of the Marine Corps. I've got an email for you, sir. Hey, Mac, what an honor that the president of South Korea wanted to pay tribute to the Marine Corps and his story about his family being evacuated from the Chosin Reservoir. That had to be an incredible honor. I assume Lieutenant General Blackman was there. Would he care to talk about what that was like? That was that's an incredible story, sir.
It is an incredible story, and for those people that are on the other end of the radio waves here, we here at the foundation received a call from the attaché's office at the embassy, the Korean embassy here in Washington. And they said that the president of the Republic of Korea that was coming, frankly, to visit with the president for matters that you can all imagine, his first stop, he wanted to come and see the Chosin Few monument in the park here at the Marine Corps Heritage Center, Semper Fidelis Memorial Park. Well, it turns out, and he did. He landed at Andrews Air Force Base, got in a motorcade, and drove directly to the Chosin Few monument. And the reason for that is because he owes his very existence to United States Marines. When the Chinese divisions fell on the 1st Marine Division at the Chosin Reservoir, and the Marines fought their way back to the sea at Hung Nam, they brought with them refugees from the north. When the Chinese crossed the Yalu, they frankly kicked Koreans out of their homes and out of their villages and took over those homes and created a number of refugees. I think the number was about 19,000 refugees that came along with the 1st Marine Division as they fought their way back from the reservoir. Among those refugees were the current president of the Republic of Korea's parents. So once they got to Hung Nam, they were met by other refugees, and I believe we actually brought out of North Korea about 100,000 refugees who were resettled in the South. And again, you know, they were brought by ship to the South, resettled, and about a couple years later, that was late 51. I think the president was born in 53, so year and a half, 2 years later, the current president of Korea was born to refugee parents who had been resettled in the South, and it's just an extraordinary story.
Wow. I'll tell you, the other cool thing about the story itself is that we have such a place that honors our heritage as a National Museum of the Marine Corps, that is becoming a national shrine, if you will, and a place that people want to visit, and that such an event could be held in such a place, is incredible. But the story is absolutely amazing, and that we have a place to host such a reception was very, very cool. I have another email for you, but it's an incredible story, which only adds to the legacy of that event, the Chosen Reservoir.
Right.
Not only did they get themselves out, but they take almost 100,000 civilians with them. Are you like, what else? What didn't those guys do? So
I know it's extraordinary, and I just want to pile on a little bit about what you said. You know, we see unit reunions. Jerry Turley, Ray Smith, and you know, dozens of other advisors from Vietnam, especially that time of the Easter Offensive. But where else would they go? You know, I mean, where else would a basic school come back together? Where else would, you know, 1-7 from the Vietnam years come back together? Where else would the chosen few put their monument up? I mean, we have created a place for Marines to honor other Marines and to show extraordinary respect for the ultimate sacrifice paid by many of their friends and fellow Marines. And I think most importantly, what we have done is created a place for a home for Marines to come back to.
You know, and it's also provided great stories for us to do, because I the story of, God, it's basic school class that loses 50% of their class, either killed or wounded in Vietnam. It's an incredible story, but Marine Corps Times did a story based on the reunion they held and the events they held at the National Museum of the Marine Corps. And then I saw that and had them on. And their story is incredibly powerful, telling the story of Terry Graves. You know, we know Graves Hall. I sat in Graves Hall, Terrence Gray. Well, it escapes me who I had on, and I apologize for that. But he tells the story of Terry Graves. He was a semi-pro baseball player, played both semi-pro and in minor league baseball. He was an athlete, and tells the story about him and the reconnaissance unit that he was with and what they did and his heroism that led to his Medal of Honor. And he makes Terry Graves, and he brings him alive for all of us to understand. And it's an incredible – let me ask you this, sir, and I have one more email, and then I'll let you go. I certainly appreciate your time today, and I love having you on, if you can't tell. Has it surprised you and surpassed even when I had General Christmas on and spoke to him about the vision of it? Has what it's become surpassed even the grand expectation for it?
Yes, I think so. I do. In many ways, in those ways, you know, I mean, the vision for the museum, the Harris Center was really extraordinary. But as you said, I think in two ways especially, it has surpassed anything anybody could have ever conceived. And one is that concept is of a home for Marines, for units and basic school classes and individuals, you know, of Vietnam veterans to come back and for the first time talk to their wife and kids about their experiences in Vietnam And I think it, you know, the other where it has exceeded anything we would have ever dreamed of is the appeal it has to school children. I mean, 54,000 school children. We have day camps here, you know, week-long day camps in the summer, you know, history day camp, art day camp, aviation day camp. You know, I mean, and half an hour after, you know, registration opens up, they're full. So I think the appeal of the education programs and the museum itself to young people is extraordinary. You know, we get groups, you know, just like some American kids go to Europe in the summer on a tour. I mean, we get, you know, Europeans come in here to visit Washington, but in some cases, part of that tour is a half a day at the National Museum of the Marine Corps. And frankly, one of the appeals to the tour company is it's free admission and free parking. This truly is a gift to the American people, to all visitors. It's a gift to the American people from Marines who built this place.
Well, you know, let me give you my kids' own comments. We thought we were going there for Dad. It was one of the most fun things we did there because of all the interactive things that you all have crafted into the museum that allow young people to experience, whether it's putting on a pack or the dioramas and all the things that you can touch, that you can look at, that you can experience. It's not just a walk around and stare at the wall event. And my kids absolutely loved it. And so I think for young people, and the way you bring that experience alive, I know the Iwo Jima thing is changing, but that whole thing, not just looking at pictures and descriptions of it, but listening to it, feeling the vibration, looking at the video, and then the ramp coming down and the flag being there, all of the way that you guys have presented it, I think is I'll use one of my kids' terms, off the hook in terms of making this experience come alive. And I think it's wonderful, sir. And I agree. When I saw the president of South Korea, and that story to be done at that place, I thought that's perfect. That is a perfect moment in time because it is the heritage of the Blue Diamond. It is the heritage of the Marine Corps. And now we do have our own Valhalla. We have our own cathedral. You know, all these holy terms that we go to, and it's just awesome. Another email for you, and then I'll let you go. Hey, Mac, I'm curious. I've seen plans of what all the construction that General Blackman has spoken about today. What's next when they fill it up, sir?
You
guys have been pretty aggressive.
Good question. It's not the first time I've heard that. Architecturally, the final phase was sort of envisioned when the first phase was built. But, you know, tragically, there will be more wars. There will be wars beyond Iraq and Afghanistan, and we will, in order to continue to accomplish our mission, we will have to honor the Marines who made history in the years beyond Iraq and Afghanistan. And the plan is, as you know, the building is round.
Yes.
And the plan is on the backside of the museum to build bands of concentric circles with the gallery space then to address, you know, future needs. In fact, when all the soil was pulled off the side of the museum for this 114,000 square foot expansion, when it was spoiled behind the building, it was actually compacted to construction standards. So the soil back there is pretty much ready to go when the time comes in the future to expand the museum.
I love that your future ops guys are always thinking and involved in current operations. So that speaks
well. Right. We've got a huge staff here. It's just stuffed with saw and Sam's grass.
All right, sir. What haven't I asked you? So architecturally, kind of like a pentagon in terms of you'll be able to expand in bands to accommodate future development. Interesting.
No, exactly.
Interesting.
Exactly.
All right, so what haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know?
The only thing I would say is for Marines that are listening, this is your museum. Come see it. Come feel it, as you said. It's immersive. It's interactive. You get off the helicopter, the CH-46 at Hill 881 South, and it's hot and humid. You visit the exhibit for Hot Talk Pass that Captain Barber held in order to let the column of Marines out of the Chosen Reservoir, and it's cold and windy. Come and experience this museum. It's your history. You made this history. Come and see the film. I think the film will be really a capstone event to your visit. It will be everything you have experienced on your journey, whether that journey continues today or whether you no longer are wearing the uniform. It is your journey, and I think the film really captures it well. So come visit your museum and see the film that is about you.
Sir, first of all, I lament that we don't do this more often. So if you're ever loitering around the museum one day and that you got nothing to do, don't be afraid to bust me off a text and say, "Hey, Mac, I feel like talking today. What do you got going?" So I thoroughly enjoy whenever you come on. And it is. I mean, I started calling it the cathedral, and I remember General Kelly came on. And I mentioned the cathedral, and he started laughing. He goes, "That's a good Catholic term, Mac." He said, "It is the cathedral, it's our sacred place."
Mac, General Neller was here as our military guest of honor for our annual awards dinner last April, and he referred to it as the cathedral.
Neller, know what? He knocks my stuff off all the time. Did he say McNamara said the cathedral? No, he never does that.
Oh.
He never does that.
He did no attribution.
I know. Trust me, he'll pay for that. Know what? I have a son that's part of the 31st MU, and they had a tough weekend. And Commandant happened to be in the region for the 75th anniversary of the Guadalcanal campaign. And went out to see him. I'm his favorite company commander from 3rd Light Armored Infantry Battalion. Tremendous respect. A Marine's Marine and a warrior. But again, that's one of his fatal flaws. He never mentions me for attribution. So I'm gonna have to take him to task for that. So anyway.
Please do. And I'll fire some reinforcing fires for it.
All right. My guest for the last hour has been the President and CEO of the Marine Corps Foundation, Lieutenant General Rusty Blackman, United States Marine Corps retired and infantryman by trade. Will Cosentini just sent me a text, "Hey, Mac, you jackass, make sure you give him my best." So from Will Cosentini, all the best, sir. And I can't tell you, again, not only to you and to everybody who works for you, from all of us and the email I get from people that go on a regular basis and send me an email and say, "Hey, I'm hearing you talk about it. I took my son to the National Museum of the Marine Corps, and oh my God, Mac, you need to ramp up your words because it was far beyond what you talk about." And my response to that guy was, "Hey, shut up. You describe it then." But no, it is a beautiful experience. In fact, I play, and hold on one second, sir, and I'll get you out of here. But every day when I start the show, I play this. Hold on one second. Okay, that was done, that was recorded by somebody's mom when my son, who's with 3-5 right now, I have another one who teaches at the basic school, but when Patrick was commissioned in the rotunda of the cathedral, I was still on active duty. My oldest son's a first lieutenant. He's standing next to me, and our family's standing there. A good buddy of mine, Chris Bronzy, Battle Buddy times two, is there. Dave Furness, who's a Battle Buddy times three, is the commissioning officer at that OCS commissioning. And we're in the rotunda of the cathedral, and they start singing that song with no accompaniment in the way that it's meant to be sung, motivated second lieutenants. And you look up and you see the quotes on the cornice of the cathedral. And Chris Bronzy looks at me and he says, "I have goosebumps." And I said, this is like a moment, a perfect moment in your life where you're with your battle buddies. One of them's commissioning your son, for God's sakes. You're hearing that song in this beautiful place with these incredible quotes from Dan Daly, David Shoup, and whatnot. And you're just thinking, wow, what a moment. And you create those not only just for me, but, you know, all those parents who have never been to anything like that before, I can imagine them walking out just completely blown away. And then for all the veterans that you're talking about, and in particular Vietnam-era veterans who were treated so poorly by the nation, you've created this special, beautiful Valhalla Cathedral for our culture. And hats off to you and everybody who works with you, sir. It's a great place, and thank you very much for coming on this morning and giving us some more reasons to come see it.
Thank you, Mac. And I hate to say this, but none of this happens for free. So, you know, anybody that is so inclined, every little bit helps to, helps us continue to preserve and promulgate the history, traditions, and culture of the Marine Corps. So please come and visit your museum, see the film, and I'm happy to talk to you anytime, Mac, anytime.
Hey, sir, question. If we're interested, how do we support the foundation?
You can pull up the Marine Corps Heritage Foundation website. There's a donate button on there. You can come up to marineheritage.org and get the address, send us a check, or there's a donate button on the website. And like I said, we value every dollar we get equally, because it comes from the heart and it comes from Marines.
Got it. Sir, if I'm going to give you a call back in the next day or so, if you wouldn't mind, I would love to make a commercial and run it here on All Marine Radio, at no cost to you guys, about becoming part of your campaign membership. Because I think what you contribute to our culture is huge. And this radio program is about the culture. And I'd love to make it a daily part of our programming to do something like that. So maybe you already have something that we could use. If not, then maybe we could produce something. But I would love to make that a part, because
We actually do, and we will get with you today or tomorrow. That would be absolutely extraordinary, Mac. That would make a huge difference. I'm grateful. All Marines are grateful for that. Thank you.
No. All right, sir. Have a great day. Keep doing good stuff, because you know as soon as you start half stepping, we're going to be on you. So
I know. My pack straps are cinched down pretty tight.
All right, keep up the great work. Thanks for the visit, sir.
All right, take care, Max. Semper Fidelis.
Semper Fidelis. That is Lieutenant General Rusty Blackman, United States Marine Corps, and what an awesome guy. We're going to take a quick break. Will Cosentini is actually going to join us. He and Mike Musselman, we're going to talk helo dunker training coming up next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military, for a first responder, for a hunter, for an outdoorsman, or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you, the Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled machine anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at battlemug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, battlemug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Mac, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOC community should be aware of.
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.